Today's daf is Nun Zayin. We're going to start at the very bottom of Nun Vav Amabet. Shlosha Achim v'achad mitzteref yimahem harei elu shalosh eduyot v'hein edut achad lahazama. So we said we had a case where there's three brothers. Each one testifies along with somebody else individually. Each brother, somebody else with them, and each one testifies about a different year that the person was had a chazaka on the property, he took the produce, and that's considered three separate eduyot, meaning that even though, I realized after class someone asked me that, I realized I didn't explain this, but generally, we'll get to it in Sanhedrin, brothers are not allowed to testify not only for each other, but also with each other. Okay, so you can't have two brothers or relatives testify together about something. So therefore, if each of these three brothers, since they're each testifying about a separate, it's all together the same, but a separate year, therefore we accept their testimony. And they're considered, though, all edut achad lahazama, which meant that if edim, zomimim, come and say, we were with you in that year, and you couldn't have known that, and we were with you, we were living somewhere else, and we were with you there, and you couldn't possibly have seen, and they knocked them all out, it's all considered one edut lahazama, which means that, first of all, let's say just the first group gets knocked out and not the other two. So again, you won't have proof of 3 years of chazaka, but the edim will not get the punishment of hazama because on their own, testifying about 1 year, they wouldn't have ever been able to mibuchai of the owner to give up his property. And therefore, nobody gets punished. Okay, if let's say only one is knocked out, you need all three to be knocked out for them to get punished. And we said also, what's the issue? That all three of them together share the cost of what they're supposed to pay back. The punishment of kasher zamam is a shared punishment. Now we're going to have a different case, which relates, but quite different. Hahush shtara, now we're not talking about a case of chazaka. We're talking about a shtara. There was a document. Dahava chatime ale betre. Okay, according to this, it was, the Rashbam says, it was a shtar v'malve, a loan. A person had an IOU. And what happened? He went to be mekayem b'shtar. So there were two witnesses signed. Shachiv chad minayhu. One of them was already dead. Now, once the witness is dead, there's no way to go find the witness and check out that this was actually legitimate. Ata achua dekai dehai dekai. Okay, let's read this better. Ata achva dehai dekai. Okay, let's explain what that means. Ata is ba. Ba, who came along? The brother of Hai, that one, dekai, who is still alive. So in other words, one brother was alive. He could be mekayim his side of the shtar. He could say, yes, that was me. In fact, that was my signature. And
one witness.
So there were two witnesses. One died, one was still alive. So the one who was still alive, who we could now go find and say, you mekayim the shtar, his brother came to testify about the other signature. V'chad achrina, okay, not only the brother, because obviously one person, forget that he's a brother, one person tested, what do you need basically? The one shtar who's there, the one aide who's still alive can come and say, yes, that was my signature, I in fact saw it, and that's enough to be mekayem the shtar. The other signature, since the guy's not there, what do you have to do? You have to find two witnesses who can verify this is his signature. Okay, unless the court had it in his record. Sometimes the court have records of signatures like in a bank. Right? They can check your signature and see they have your signature on file. But assuming that they didn't have that. So one signature, we're going to be mekayim by one guy. The other one, we have a witness and the brother of the other person who are mekayim the shtar of the second signature. So now what's the problem, right? You have two brothers now, basically, who are making this document happen. So charachmina lasude to testify a chatimat yedei deidach about the signature of the other guy. Sava Ravina lemeimar haynu matnitin shlosha achim v'chad mitzteref imahem. Ravina said this sounds just like our Mishnah because you have three brothers, right? Each is testifying about a different part, and therefore they don't connect. So here you have one brother. You had a document signed by two people. But now you have one brother who's dealing with one side of the signature and the other brother who's dealing with the other side, which seems to be a good separation, just like each brother is testifying about a different year. But not so. Amar le Rav Ashi midame. Hatam lo nafik nechi riva le demamona apume da'achi. Hacha nafik nechi rivia demamona apuma da'achi. De'achai, I guess it means, which means achi. What does it mean here? Nechi rivia is less than a quarter, which really means three quarters. In other words, he's saying, right, according to the second case, let's go to the first case, it's easier. The first case, if we got rid of all the brothers, what kind of testimony would we have? Exactly half the testimony, because we'd have the other witness who testified about year one, year two, year three. So in every case, we have half of it is done by the brothers, and half of it is done by one other witness. And because each one stands independently, brother, witness, brother, witness, brother, witness, each thing is 50% the brother, 50% the other side. That's fine. There's no nigiupa tavar. But in the other case, what happens? In the end, we're going to be Mekayim Mishtar based on three quarters of it being by brother's testimony. In other words, if 50% is the brother and the 50% is somebody else, that works because then you have brother and somebody else, and that's okay. But in the case of the Shtar, you have one full signature, that's 50%, done by one brother. And then half of the other signature is verified by the second brother, which means 75% is done by brothers. And that's already not, can't work, that doesn't work. Only if it's 50%, then it's okay. So therefore, he didn't let this happen. Okay, Mishnah. Now we're going back to a new topic. We're connecting, okay, this is going to be, there's sort of two different ways of reading this Mishnah. There's the Rashbam and people who go like him, and then there's the Rambam and the Meiri who have a different approach to it. What type of chazakah, again, we're talking about here. So first I'll read according to the Rashbam, then I'll just mention in a word the Rambam and the Meiri, which then you'd have to explain the Gemara according to them. I'm going to stick with the Rashbam in general for explaining the Gemara. Eilu dvarim sheyesh lehem chazakah, ve'eilu dvarim she'en lehem chazakah. By the way, this is a very typical structure of a Mishnah where it sets up these things have, these things don't, and then it starts to go into which things do, which things don't. So according to the Rashbam, what we're talking about here is someone who's machzik in a field for 3 years, okay, would these things create a chazakah or not? If they were doing the following things for 3 years, do we create a chazakah by doing this or do we not? According to the Rambam and the Meiri, these are things that maybe you could create a chazakah immediately. Okay, not just 3 years, but could you create a chazakah immediately by doing the following three things? But like I said, we're going to leave that opinion aside. We're going to stick with the Rashbam and those who go like him, which basically we're talking about chazakah 3 years. Can you create a chazakah? Again, the question is going to be, is the neighbor assumed to have complained about this type of thing? Is this something the neighbor would be makpid on? And then it's going to be a big difference, by the way, if you go with the Rashbam or the Rambam. Is this something we assume is going to be makpid on immediately? And if he doesn't complain immediately, then you already create a chazakah. Or according to the way we'll explain it, which is the Rashbam, which means 3 years, right? He won't complain about you using this, which means that you can't create a chazakah just because he didn't protest. So, if you went into your friend's property and put your animal there, Tanur rechaim v'kiraim, or you put your oven or your millstone or your burners, umigdal, you put up a migdal, a fortress, migadel tarnagolim, right? That's what it is. I was thinking, I didn't remember migdal being there. Umigadel tarnagolim, he would breed tarnagolim, our roosters there. Vinotain zivlo b'chatzer, he would put his garbage in the chatzer. Ein a chazaka. You don't create a chazaka. If your neighbor doesn't complain, the assumption is, now notice where this took place, in the chatzer. Outside in his courtyard, he wouldn't necessarily care about you doing this kind of thing. Now again, according to the Rambam, it would be, this is the kind of thing, right? Even immediate, right? You would expect, well, we'll see the opposite case, right? Immediately you could create a chazaka. And here they're saying you can't create a chazaka immediately. And according to the Rashbam, it would be even 3 years of use, and the guy doesn't complain, we can assume that's not because, you know, this kind of stuff doesn't bother him. Aval, now what's the issue with these things? You've just placed something in his property. You haven't changed his property, right? Generally, when we talk about chazakah, either you take things out of his, like the pay road, and you sell them, or you change something in the field itself. So now we're going to see. But if you built a wall to separate an area, designate an area for your animal, that's already changing his property. Gavoa asarat tvachim. Again, it has to be a mechitza gavoa asarat tvachim. This goes back to many things we learned about in Eruvin and in Sukkah about this height of asarat tvachim. V'chein l'tanur, v'chein l'kirayim, v'chein l'rechayim. Hichnis, the same thing if you built a wall for your tanur, kirayim, or rechayim. Hichnis tarnagolim l'toch habayit. Okay, if you bring the roosters into the house. You built an area specifically for your garbage to be either you dug down three or you raised it three. All those things are making more structural differences to the person's property, except for the putting the animals in his house, but that's something you can imagine someone would be makpid about. Okay, then you can create a chazaka. I'm just going to repeat one last time, and then we'll just stick with the Rashbam. But again, according to the Rashbam, after 3 years of doing this, according to the Rambam, immediately after doing this, you can already create a chazakah.
It's interesting because the three things have smells.
They all have smells associated with them. Not all of them. Well, I guess they all. Right. All of them do. Right. And the oven and the right and the zevel. Yes. In theory, you could say they all have some smell associated with them. So now the Gemara is going to try to understand this Mishnah. They're going to have a little difficulty. Maishna resha umaishna seifa. What's the difference between the Resha and the Sefer? Now, we kind of gave an explanation. It's a little strange they're asking this question because it seems kind of obvious, right? One is structural change, one is not. But now we're going to see that they go a bit in this direction. Okay, what's the difference here? Amar Ula. Kol she'ilu kana b'nichse hager. Kol she'ilu b'nichse hager kana. B'nichse chavero kana. Kol she'ilu b'nichse hager lo kana. B'nichse chavero lo kana. They're going to say, how did we come up with this list? Because we looked at Nichse Hager. This answer doesn't really answer it, right? We expected them to say, well, this is something kavua that you're changing, and this is something you're not changing. But they just say like this, which is, Ula says, remember, there's different kinds of chazakah we've been discussing. So again, assuming we're in the Rashbam and we're talking about Chazkav Shalosh Shanim. So what do we look at? We look at if you went into an abandoned property, how could you create a chazakah on the abandoned property, right? We saw a lot about that. If you hoed one little hoe, if you did, right? All different. So whatever would work for Nichse Hager would also work for Chezkat Shalosh Shanim. The acts that you need to do in the Chezkat Hager would be the same act that you would need to do for 3 years to create a chazakah. So now, and that's why certain things work and certain things don't, because those things, if you went to abandoned property and you stuck your tanur there, that wouldn't mean you have rights of ownership. You put your animal there, that wouldn't mean that you're taking over the property. That would mean something, that would just mean you're just using the space right now, but it doesn't mean you want to take possession. But if you built something on there or did something more serious, then it would already mean that. So that's, what?
3 years is permanent whether you've done structural changes or not. I mean, if somebody raises his roosters in a plot or
no, again, if you go into an abandoned property, you create a chazakah immediately. If I go to an abandoned property and I put my roosters there inside the house, then I've already, that's possession. If I built a wall, that's immediately possession. But if I go into your house and I build a wall and you don't complain, again, the Rambam will say, if you didn't complain, I built a wall, I'm immediately, I've claimed rights of the, okay? But the Rashbam will say, if I did it and you didn't complain over the course of 3 years, then I can create a chazakah. Okay? So now.
It seems that a tanur is something you have to, in those days, a tanur wasn't like, okay, we just take it immediately.
Yes. So the Mefreshim say here, there's different kinds of ovens. Some were stuck into the ground, and these are ones that are not. These are ones that are a little bit more portable. Okay? Like imagine where they make the pitot, like that kind of tanur. Right? Where you could carry it around. That's the assumption. It's good that you bring that up because they say we're not talking about those ovens that they would basically stake into the ground. That's already more permanent. Okay, so now we're going to have a problem with this statement of Ula. Matkif la Rav Sheshet uklalahu? Is that really a klal? That anything that's koneh b'nichse hager is koneh b'nichse chavero? We already know that it's not the case. B'harei nir de b'nichse hager kana. If you remember, on Daf, I believe it was Lamed Vav, there was a whole discussion. It was one of those things, V'chol G'dolei Hador said, near Havi Chazaka, near Lo Havi Chazaka. Remember, there's a whole debate about whether plowing is a Chazaka, whether it isn't. It had to do with the whole thing about how many months you needed on the year each of the years before and after, because if you say near is a chazakah, then it's enough within the beginning of the third year to just plow, and then you've already created your chazakah. And others say, no, you need the full 3 years. Near plowing doesn't help you create the chazakah. Okay, so according to this, they're going according to the one who says near lo havi chazakah. And they're going to say here, we already learned that if you plow in the field of an abandoned property, you create a chazakah. And when you plow in the field of another person for 3 years, the plowing itself doesn't create a chazakah. You need a full 3 years, even without the, right? The plowing doesn't help. So now, again, you could say, well, some people say it is, but even so, the fact that there's a debate about it, and everyone agrees about the nir havi chazakah in the nichse hager, shows that these are two different cases, and you can't learn one from the other. And he continues to say, Baharay, and I could give you a flip one, something that works b'nichse chavero and doesn't work b'nichse agir. Now, you don't have to necessarily assume that that's what Ula meant, right? Because he says, if it's koneh b'nichse agir, it's koneh b'nichse chavero. He didn't say the reverse, right? Baharay achila peirot b'nichse chavero kana, b'nichse agir lo kana. Remember this? If you take the produce, obviously for 3 years, you're going to be koneh and a nichse chavero. But if you take the produce from a nichse hager, you're not kone. Why? Because remember, everything's hefker there. So the fact that you took the payroll could just mean that you were taking the payroll because they were hefker. But it doesn't mean that you've got a kinyan on the property. So therefore, he rejects Ula. Ela, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Ravua. Now, Rav Nachman says something in the name of Rav Ravua. I'll already tell you the structure before we learn it so that it'll be clear to you. Rav Nachman says in the name of Rav Ravua an explanation. We're going to bring a question from a Mishnah against it. We're going to knock it down. So Rav Nachman is going to come up with a second explanation in the name of Rav Ravua. He's going to bring a different explanation. Then we're going to have two attempts by other rabbis to explain the first reading of Rav Nachman and how it could still work. That's going to be the structure. So Elam Rav Nachman Amar Rav Ravua. Hacha b'chatzer ha-shutafim askinan. We're talking about when the Mishnah said a chatzer, that you put something in your neighbor's chatzer or someone's chatzer, it's specifically talking about when you have a shared property. Okay? You have a shared property with someone, and one of the... Okay, so what does it mean? It means you own this general property, but he's got his stuff on his side, and you've got your stuff on your side, and you put your stuff on his side. Okay? And that's when we're saying, Debaha madakti lo kapte, amchitza kapte. What's going to be the difference in a chatzer shutfim? If we generally own this property together, imagine like we talked about on a chada on those driveways, right? The driveways are mishutaf to the different people. So you put your stuff on my side of the driveway, I'm not makpid on that kind of thing because we share the driveway in general. But if you start building on my side of the property, then I'm going to be makpid. Okay, so here we have the distinction that we talked about how amada, just putting something there, and mechitza, actually building something. But now we say that the whole Mishnah is only talking about shutafim. So now the assumption of this is what? That shutafim are makpid on certain things and not makpid on other things, right? They're makpid if you're going to start building in their side, but they're not makpid if you're just going to put something up there. That is going to be a subject of debate now, or we're going to ask a question on that. Ubehamadakdi lo kapte. Is it true that just putting something in the chatzir of your partner, someone you share property with, he's not makpid? Vehatnan, doesn't it say in the Mishnah, hashutafim shenadru hana'a zemize? If you have two shutafim and they were noder hana'a, they said, I refuse to get benefit from anything of yours and you refuse to get benefit from anything of mine, asurim likanes lechatzir. They cannot go into the other person's chatzir. Now, going into a chatzir is certainly not building something, right? It's like ha'amada. So now what do you see? The shutafim are makpid on just someone walking into their chatzir. Otherwise, it would be allowed if you're mudar hana'am. What does mudar hana'am mean? It means I won't get any benefit from your property, and you won't get any benefit from my property. But if we think that people aren't makpid on this, well then, even if you're mudar hana'am, you should, right? They're not makpids, so you should be allowed to go in. Now already you can see that the criteria for nidarim can be different from the criteria for, and that's going to be in the end our answer. But before we get to that, they're going to assume that right now that is the case, that they are the same, even though, again, you could definitely make distinctions. But the assumption here is if you're mudar hana'a and it's asurli kanes, it must mean that each one is makpid on the other coming in. Again, we'll question that later, but right now we're going to stick with that. So, Ella, I'm Rav Nachman, I'm a Rav Ravua. By the way, this is a strange thing, just in general. Rav Nachman said something in the name of Rav Ravua. He was questioned, and then he says something else. You would think he would say, okay, so maybe that's not a good answer. I'll come up with my own answer. But instead, what's weird is he's coming up with an answer in the name of Rav Ravua. Maybe he went back to Rav Ravua and asked him, and Rav Ravua gave him a new answer. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not sure what happened here. It's just interesting that maybe he says, oh, yeah, you know, I didn't remember right. Maybe it was something else. It's strange. Just throwing it out there. So, El Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Ravua, Hacha berichava shel achorei batim askinan. Now, I'll give you one explanation, by the way. There's two ways of understanding this, and one way will be a little more supportive of the fact that it would make more sense, particularly in this case, to say that he must just be readjusting what Rabbi Ravua said. He's not coming up with a totally different explanation. It's going to be two ways of understanding this. One is it's a totally new explanation. One is that it's building off of Rabbi Ravua, but detailing it a little bit more. Okay, so let's go with the one that it's a re-explanation of what Rabbi Ravua said. So first, we said Rabbi Ravua said, we're talking about shutafim, neighbors. So now we're going to say, what was the problem? The problem was that shutafim are makpid zelzeh because you can't go into the chatzer of chavero if you're mudar hana'ah. So what must it be talking about? Okay, the first explanation is going to say we're still talking about shutafim. The second way I'll read this is that it has nothing to do with shutafim at all. It's a totally new explanation. But let's assume we're still on shutafim. What he means is, we're not talking about the chatzir, the front yard where everybody passes through. We're talking about the backyard. The backyard already people are less makpid about. So when we talked about the Mishnah, mudar hana'ah, the shutafim or asurim likanes, that's through the front way where everybody uses the front chatzir. But when there's the rachava mechorea batim, there's some area behind the houses which people don't use as much, that area is going to be what our Mishnah is talking about. So even though our Mishnah and that Mishnah said chatzir, the chatzir in our Mishnah is the backyard and the chatzir in the other Mishnah is the front yard. And that's one way of explaining it. So that he's talking about shutafim, but we're talking about the backyard. Another way of explaining this is that he goes off of the shutafim. Our Mishnah has nothing to do with shutafim. It's just regular people who have not necessarily anything to do with one another. And yet, why is it, right? But then it has nothing to do with the Mishnah in Hamudar Hana'ah, because because of that Mishnah, we've rejected the explanation that has to do with shutafim. And he just says, all these cases are in somebody's backyard where he's less makpid, and that's why in someone's backyard, if you start building in his backyard, well, definitely it's going to be makpid. But if you just put something in his backyard, since he doesn't use the back area so much, we're going to assume that he's going to be okay with that, and therefore it doesn't complain, and therefore you can't create a chazakah if you've just put your animals in someone's backyard. Okay, so again, it could be he's building off of what Rabbi Ravua said originally, or he's saying that Rabbi Ravua actually said something totally different, which to them would raise questions. How did he know this about Rabbi Ravua? When he first said Rabbi Ravua said something, and now he says Rabbi Ravua said something else. That's why the first explanation makes a bit more sense, that he's saying, oh, well, it's true Rabbi Ravua said this, but it must be he was talking about the backyard instead of the front yard. He could come up with some explanation. Now, like I said, we're going to have two different explanations of how the first explanation of Rabbi Ravua would work, even in light of the Mishnah, and we're going to say that, right, there's a difference between mudar hana'ah and chazakah. Rav Papa Amar, idi v'idi b'chatzar ha-shutafim, v'ika de-kapte, v'ika de-lo-kapte. There's some people who are makpid and some people who aren't makpid. So in other words, when it comes to creating a general rule, we can't create a general rule because some shutafim might be makpid if someone's going to do something, and some shutafim might not be makpid. Somebody just puts their animals or puts their oven there. So therefore, we're going to distinguish between what's going to be the basic distinction between mudar hana'ah and chazaka. One is mamon and one is isur. So gabe mamona, generally we know that when it's isurim, we're going to be more machmir. When it's mamon, we're going to be more meka. So gabe mamona lekula, gabe isura lechumra. Let's start with the isura. When it comes to mudar hana'ah, we're going to be machmir and assume that the person was machpid. If we're assuming the person was machpid, what conclusion are we going to get to? You cannot go into your friend's chatzir. But with Mamon, we're going to be Mekel and assume that the person was not Makpid. Well, if we assume the person's not Makpid, what's going to be the halacha? You can't create a chazaka because we can assume that the person wasn't necessarily Makpid and he didn't complain. And that's why we don't create a chazaka. That's the first explanation. The second is, Ravina Amar La'olam Lo Kapte. No shutafim are ever Makpid. Now, why? What are we left to explain then? Hashutafim Shenadru Hana'azem Izasrim Likanes. So why is that? Hamane Rabbi Eliezer. This follows Shita Rabbi Eliezer. D'tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Afilu Vitur Asur B'Mudar Hana'a. When you're talking about someone who says, I won't get any benefit from you, benefit is not defined as, this was an assumption we made at the beginning, that benefit is something that I'm makpi that you would get benefit from me. Right? Like if I put you put your animals and I say, oh, I don't want you putting your animals there. But he claims that even if you're mivater and you don't care if the person gets hana'ah, you're still, if you said, I will not get hana'ah from that person, even something he doesn't care about is still considered hana'ah. And therefore, the vitur has no relevance. The fact that the person isn't makpid is a totally irrelevant factor in mudarna. Whereas it's the major factor when it comes to chazakah, because that's all issue. If he's mivater and he didn't complain, and then you claim, hey, I have rights of ownership, you didn't complain. The guy said, of course I didn't complain. I'm not makpid on that. That's a totally separate issue from the mudar hana'ah issue. So two different distinctions. Either we say isur mamonot, isur mamon, or we say the vitur is not a fact, is a non-factor entirely in mudar hana'ah, and it is a factor in chazaka. By the way, this is just Rabbi Lezer Shita. Obviously, someone probably disagrees with him. You know, assuming the way the Gemara says it's Rabbi Lezer, it means it's not the common approach. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Bna'a. Bakol Shutafim Ma'akvin Ze'et Ze'. Okay, now we're going to get off on a total tangent here. Okay, he says in the name of Rabbi Bna'a, Rabbi Yochanan, that everything Shutafim or Ma'akvin Ze'et Ze'. In other words, Shutafim can prevent their partner from their, you know, partner from doing anything in their property. Chutz min hakfisa. Except for laundry. Why? A very interesting answer. A reason. She'ein darkan shel b'nei Yisrael lehitbazot al hakfisa. From here, we're going to get into dinei tzniut. If the woman wants to do kfisa in the shutaf's area, he has to allow her because it's not appropriate. Where else is she going to do it? She's going to do it outside. And if she does it outside, it's not sanua, because when she does the laundry, her legs are revealed, her arms are revealed. It's one of these full body actions that, you know, is going to reveal parts of her body. It's going to be embarrassing for her. And there I was thinking, you know, you shouldn't hang out your dirty laundry. Like a little, okay. So because of that, you have to allow the women to do laundry in the, right? You have to wonder if it's a man who lives there. It doesn't sound so appropriate either, right? But what's interesting here is maybe it's not 100% a tzniut issue, but the woman's embarrassed to do it in a public place. Right, because it's specifically public versus her neighbor's property. Right, it doesn't say there's no men in that area, so it could be also it's a bit of and the word lehit bazot. It's an embarrassment for her to be doing her laundry in public. Right, the Mefreshim say about her revealing her. I think the Rashbam says it about her revealing her arms. Right, here the Rashbam says shetzricho la'amot shem yechefot legalot shok la'amot b'nahar. Right, they would do it in the nahar, and it would be embarrassing. And therefore, you have to allow her to do it. Okay. From here, we're going to get into all sorts of interesting things, some tzniut related, and then we're going to get a little off the tzniut topic onto something else, which I just think, again, goes back to very interesting facts that the rabbis thought to involve themselves in and tell people how, you know, how to run their lives, how to organize things. Okay, we'll talk about it. We're really going to get to clutter in your houses. Okay, for those who have cluttered houses. Okay.
But then basically doing your laundry wouldn't create a chazaka because you can force the neighbor to do your laundry.
Right. So, yeah. So first of all, it wouldn't create a chazaka. And also it's saying here that you can't prevent your neighbor if your neighbor wants to do that. Right. But yeah, so right, the Rashbam says it's exactly the cases in the Mishnah. In other words, that it's connecting with the cases in the Mishnah, that all those things, you wouldn't be able to create a chazaka because the neighbor has to allow you to do that. Okay. The otzeim einav meraot bira. Okay, this is a pasuk in Yeshayahu. It goes like this. Holech tzedakot v'dover misharim, mo'es bebetza. These are all things that someone should, right, walk with righteousness. You should hate bribes. Me'ashakot noar kapav mitmoch bashochad. Right, that's the bribes. The betza is also, I forget the word for betza, extortion, I think is betza. Otem oz no mishmo adamim, but otem einav mir'ot bara. You should keep your eyes closed from seeing bad things going on. Okay, so what are we now going to say that these bad things are, since we're already in the topic of tzniut? Amar b'chia bar Abba, zeh she'em estakel b'nashim b'sha'a she'omdot ala kfisa. This is what you should, right? Of all things, it says, close your eyes to seeing evil things. This is the women doing the laundry. Okay, maybe there's a good reason why men should be doing laundry.
Yeah.
That's what you were going to say. Yes. There was actually, I was reading some commentary that was talking about, if the men do it, I think it was that you could be machpid if the man's doing the laundry. And there was an assumption the men were doing laundry. So I thought that was a good source. Okay.
Maybe they weren't doing women's clothing. Because to see the women's clothing.
That's an interesting reason. That to see the women's clothing, right. That's another good answer. That maybe it's also, you know, like you can imagine women's bras hanging around. It's inappropriate for men to be seeing these things. And maybe that's why it's also, right, you would think if someone comes to your house and you're putting out laundry, it's a little embarrassing to see you hanging up all the women's items. And maybe that's part of the issue. And not necessarily only the tzniut of the woman in terms of her body, but tzniut of the woman in terms of her clothing. That's a good explanation. Okay. So, Osemina Mirat Baram or Bechia Baraba, Zesha Emstaka Banashim Bashashom Dora Kvisa. Hechidami, what's the case exactly where it's usher to watch the women? Idi Ikadarka Achrita Rashahu? If there's another way to go, and he specifically walks by the place where the women are doing the laundry, so then he's a Rasha. And Idi Lake, in other words, and then it's not even this Pasuk, Osemina Mirat Baraba. That's a downright Rasha. If there's no other way to go, then anusu, then he's got no choice but to walk by. So how could you blame this person? So what could possibly be the case? So what are the answers? Lo olam delei kadarcha achrita. There really is no way to go. Ba'filu hachi mibayle lemenas nafshe. There's no other way to go, but even so, he has to basically, you know, put his head down. Like, don't look. Just because you're walking by something doesn't mean you have to look at it. Okay, and therefore he should prevent himself from looking while she's doing the laundry. Okay, Bamine Rabbi Yochanan mi Rabbi Bina'a. Okay, we were already talking about Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Bina'a and issues of possibly tzniut related. Now we're going to talk about, interestingly enough, we usually complain that there's only tzniut when it comes to women. Here we talk about tzniut when it comes to men. Okay, not only women, but also Talmid Chacham is a certain level of tzniut. He's supposed to. Interesting, it sounds like a high level of tzniut. Ba'amine Rabbi Yochanan mi Rabbi Bina'a. Chaluk shel Talmid Chacham ketzad. What is the chaluk? The assumption here is it's the undergarments, because the chaluk is what you wear underneath and the talit is what you wear on top. In a minute, we're going to see the talit. Okay, so talit doesn't necessarily mean a talit that we're talking about. Talit is a cloak. So the chaluk ketzad, kol she'em b'saro nir'e mitachtav. His basar can't be seen from underneath. So there's a few different ways of explaining this. Either it can't be see-through, okay, or also you can't be showing skin underneath, which means you have to basically cover most of your body. Obviously, to what extent basar, you know, what basar, it's not so clear that he has to be covering. Talit shel Talmid Chacham ketzad, kol she'ein chaluko nir'e mitachtav tefach. Okay, you can't, as your chaluk, your undergarments have to cover a certain amount, and your talit has to cover that. You can't be seeing the undergarments more than a tefach, can't be sticking out. Okay, now that we got to how, so here you see, a Talmid Chacham also has a certain amount, and the Mepharshim quote here, the in the halakha, that he can't, it has to be, you can't wear sheer garments. I don't remember what else they quote here, the halakha from this. Right, they have to, it's interesting, the Rambam says they have to be, in the Sefer Amada, he talks about Talmidei Chachamim, and he says they have to be pleasant, they have to be clean, their clothing, they can't be extravagant, you can't wear poor person's clothing, and you can't wear sheer garments. Okay, it doesn't talk about the length exactly, so it's not clear exactly what the length is here. Right, and it does seem long enough that this concept of you can't see your skin could be length and it could be thickness or sheerness of the chaluk. Okay, now that we were talking about the chaluk and the talit, now we're going to talk about something else, which is shulchan shel talmid chacham ketzad. How is this table supposed to look? Okay. Shnei shlishei gedil v'shlish gelai. Two-thirds should be covered with a tablecloth. A third should be uncovered, like gelai galoi. V'alav, on the uncovered part, should be the ka'arot v'yerek v'yerek. Okay, the plates with a vegetable should be on the uncovered part of the table. V'tabaatomi b'chutz. And, okay, here you can view the table. First of all, there's two explanations of the shlish and shnei shlish. Okay, here's good pictures in the Koran. So the first is that one-third on the side should be uncovered. That's where you should put your stuff without, it should be uncovered. Your food goes there. Now, why is that, right? It's funny. We always cover our table and put the food on the table. But what's the concern? Tablecloth will get dirty. It will look not nice. So the part that's covered, you use for other things. The part that's uncovered, that's where you eat your food so that you don't make a mess. Okay, the idea is that things not look messy. Another opinion is that dafka, the food goes in the center third, and that the covered part is on the sides. Okay, how exactly you do that with a cloth is a little tricky. Right here, I guess they just, yeah, they cut the cloth in the picture. You know, it's a little weird. But basically that the center is where you put the food, and then people sit on the cloth part. And the concern maybe where you serve the food, things will spill more likely than where you're actually eating. I don't know exactly. Now, I brought this particularly to show the rings. Tables had rings on it, okay? You can see the ring here on the side of the table. The ring, it's unclear whether it jutted. It sounds like it jutted out from the side of the table. Now, what was the point of the rings? Imagine they had small houses. So when you're done eating, what'd you do? Your table was a table with legs that were separate, right? When you rent tables, let's say you get those round tables and they have the legs and you pull them up and, you know, you stick your round thing on top. So they would hang the table on a hook when they were done eating. So the tables have rings on the sides. So now there's a whole discussion as to which side you should put the rings on. The assumption was there was one side of the table where nobody sat to eat, and that's the chutz. And then the other side of the table was where people sat to eat. Now there's a bit of a debate here, or I don't know, debate exactly, but different explanations about when we talk about the table, often in those times people ate at their own table. In other words, each person had their own table. That's why on Pesach, they always say, Mesalek et ha-shulchan, right? You would pick up the table, or even it comes up with eating between milk and meat. One of the opinions is, as soon as you pick up the table, you can already start eating dairy if you want, because it's a new meal. Because the assumption was the table was, when you picked up the table, that meant clearing off the table. So there's all different times where they talk in the Gemara about picking up tables. So the assumption is, tables were made for one person. So you sat on one side, and the ring was on the other side. Okay? Or maybe not. Maybe the ring is on the inside, which is the part where you're sitting to eat. So according to this, where should your ring be? Taba'atomi b'chutz. The ring should be on the outside part. So then they say, wait a minute. V'hatanya, there's a braita that says, taba'atomi b'fnim. This is so interesting because, I mean, you'll see in a minute why we get to this whole debate about the tabat. But it's not just that the rabbis are saying this, but the braita says this. Okay? There's a braita that talks about where the ring on your table should be. Okay? Now what's the issue here? Lokasha ha de'ika yenuka, ha de'leka yenuka. We're worried that if there's a child and you put it, now there's a few different opinions about this, but if you put it on the inside, then the child's going to play with the ring and shake the table. This is why it's funny that this is what they're talking about, right? So put it on the outside so the child won't play with it. Okay? Alternatively, you could say the child running around and not sitting at the table, and he might bump into it while it's on the outside, and therefore you should put it on the inside if there's children. Okay, that's one explanation. So again, I repeat that interesting that the rabbis saw themselves responsible for talking about safety, right? This is safety, betichuti issues. They view themselves as this is, you know, our responsibility to educate people about how to do things safety-wise in their house. V'ibai dema hadaleka yenuka. It's not that it's children we're worried about. It's that we're worried about a shamash tripping over it when he's serving the food. So if you have a servant who's, you know, serving your food, a steward as they call him, if you have a steward who's serving your food, so keep the ring on the inside because he's going to be walking around all the time. He'll bump into the ring. Again, insurance, right? You're going to get in trouble, insurance. So you don't want to be responsible for having hurt the shamash. A third explanation. Hava ha de'ika shama. It is when you have a shamash, either which way. V'lo kasha habi yamama habalelya. There's daytime and nighttime. And nighttime, you know, during the day, we can assume the shamash will see the ring and he'll pay attention and he won't bump into it. But at nighttime, he can't be blamed for not seeing it. And therefore, at nighttime, you'd have to have the ring on the inside. Okay. You can imagine also, if you're sitting at the table, the ring is a nuisance on the inside. But what they're saying is it's a worse nuisance on the outside if you have people walking around serving, especially at nighttime. Okay, now, if we talked about what the Shulchan of a Talmid Chacham looks like, now they're going to tell us what the Shulchan of an Am Haaretz. The Shulchan of an Am Haaretz, domen lemidura, ukderot mikifot ota. An Am Haaretz's table looks like a fire with kderot all around it, okay? Meaning his stuff is not organized. He brings all the pots to the table, okay? This is right. This very fine people don't ever bring a pot to the table, right? You know, this is... If you're telling me, again, are they saying that all Talmidei Chachamim ate like that and all Am Haaretz ate like that? Clearly not, as far as I can understand. But what they're trying to say is, if you want to be thought of as a Talmid Chacham, set your table appropriately. Don't stick everything on the table. Don't bring your serving pots to the table, because then it's like there's a fire on the table. You know, it's, but right, it's a funny image that they're trying to say. But if you're... And because it's the Am Haaretz, they're the people who throw everything on the table. The assumption is also the mapah is in the middle, and everything's on the mapah, and the mapah gets dirty, and it looks like a big mess. Okay, continuing along a little bit more, we'll finish to the two dots. Mitashal Talmidei Chachamim Ketzad. What does it look like? Now, the assumption is we're talking about not the bed itself, but under the bed. What does it look like under your bed? Okay, you can imagine, right? You have hard sandals in the summer next to your bed. You know, you want to get out of bed, you want to put shoes on, great. You have slippers, warm slippers next to your bed in the winter. Okay, right? For those who go to sleep with the hard floors in Israel, know that it's good to have your slippers right next to your bed when you go to sleep at night. Okay. V'shalam ha'aretz domel otsar balum. But in Am Haaretz, it's like a huge mess under there. He's got everything under the bed, okay? Right? This is good for people who try to keep their house free of clutter, but shove everything underneath things, right? So they're saying that's the way of an Am Haaretz. So like I said, this is the clutter sugya. It's all about keep it simple, don't have everything all over the place, keep things neat and organized. And that is so interesting because I'm sure not all Talmidei Chachamim live like that, but they're trying to say if you, you know, keep your stuff organized, be neat, be organized, that will help you in everything in life. So, good lesson for all of us.